A busy Thursday chat between you and I on April 11th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We welcome to Quinnipiac University Interim Associate School of Communications Dean, Professor Ben Bogardus, to chat about the news of the death of O.J. Simpson and the lasting effect that coverage of his murder trial had on TV news. And of course, only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by with the latest news and buzz from the Park City. Joining us right now to talk about the TV end of it, Quinnipiac University Interim Associate Dean of Communications, Dean Professor Ben Bogardus at the School of Communications there, talking about the OJ thing. Ben, hi, it's Paul again. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Boy, it was a long time ago, Ben, but previous to that, had we seen, I don't think we did, unless I'm forgetting something, had we seen a trial like that captivate America, at least on the TV side? Because that overturned everything.
Absolutely. And I think the Menendez brothers trial a few years before that was really the first one that was televised. Court TV came online, became a cable channel that did these cases. There was the William Kennedy Smith trial before that as well. But the O.J. Simpson one was really the one that crossed over from, you know, niche cable network to national obsession. It was shown during the daytime, preempting soap operas for, you know, the better part of a year to put this on the air for all the networks. And also you have to remember back in 1995, you know, we didn't have the internet as we know it now. So people were really turning their television on to find out the most recent information to follow the trial.
And all we had, Ben, we didn't have Fox News wasn't around, MSNBC wasn't around. Okay. Like you said, you had Court TV and CNN was there. They had taken the air some years earlier. So that turned out to be a boon for them as well.
Oh, absolutely. And it made the careers of many people. I mean, Greta Van Susteren, the longtime Fox News anchor, I mean, she got her start as an analyst on the O.J. Simpson trial for CNN. And that, again, it made headlines around the world. Every day was a new revelation. And we really, you know, saw the sort of the first inklings of, you know, the modern reality TV era, or in the social media era, where everyone's talking about it, where everyone is, you know, gathering around the television to have this shared experience on the trial.
And Ben, really, and you mentioned, you know, reality TV. Yeah, there was a guy named Robert Kardashian on the OJ mm-hmm. defense team. Let's not forget that. But I realized, and I was doing shows like this, you know, back then, Ben, and there were two aspects of this. There was the legal aspect of this, and I know you cut your teeth in TV and me in radio, but we all went out and grabbed, as you know, as many experts as we could. Hey, is it a lawyer? Do they know criminal stuff? Let's put them on the air. So there was that aspect of it. But there was also the, for lack of a better term, there was the personality slash almost a weird kind of entertainment aspect about it. Hey, what's Marsha Clark really like? What's Chris Darden really like? Hey, that Judge Ito, he looks like a square. I mean, we got caught up in that as well.
Oh, we sure did. And I mean, they became celebrities in their own right. I mean, Judge Ito, there was a famous Saturday Night Live sketch of the trial that, you know, had all of the characters in there. You mentioned Marsha Clark and Chris Darden. I mean, there was rumors they were having an affair. Robert Kardashian, you know, the Kardashians weren't a thing before the trial introduced them to Robert Kardashian. And of course, you know, Johnny Cochran, whose whole persona is theatrical, and the glove scene. And, you know, it was just every single person there. It was like a Hollywood trial. They were playing the part. It was like a movie. They had characters. They had their own personalities. And it really became a national obsession following these people through their characters. That's why I sort of liken this to a reality show, in that you have all of these archetypes of the good guys, the bad guys, the crazy person, the person that you want to see win, the person that you want to see fail. And it was really, you know, the first time that this sort of theatrical nature of a trial captivated people, because they were watching it in real time.
Ben Bogardus is the guest. He's the interim dean at the Quinnipiac University School of Communications. Any negatives out of this, Ben? I always think it's a positive if we cover as much of a trial like this as we can, so people don't, and the news business that you and I are in, we don't have a tendency to pick and choose. And I think that can warp people's aspects on this. But to your mind, are there any lingering negatives from the OJ trial or not?
I think a very large negative. If you think from an ethical perspective, you know, two people died, you know, in the case that O.J. Simpson was tried for. And sometimes we forget that, you know, those were people who, you know, had their own families and people cared about them. And they became almost, you know, a sideshow in all of this. And so if you're trying to think, you know, what is the bad side is it turns what should be a, you know, somber moment and something that, you know, seeking justice for two people who were murdered into a circus, into a sideshow. And I think that sort of hurts the idea that we're supposed to take trials seriously, that we're supposed to take the justice system seriously when it does turn into a reality show and tabloid fodder every day.
As a college professor and an instructor and a former news professional, do these cases, as you say, the Menendez brothers, the OJ case, the other cases, are these used as teaching points in class here? Because I can imagine younger students, Ben, having, I mean, literally, this was 29, 30 years ago. I would imagine some of them have A, zero idea about the case, and B, in an ancillary way, zero idea about the effect it had on the business they want to get into.
Absolutely. And we do use those in the sense of talking about the history of media. And this is when things changed. This was the inflection point. After the OJ trial, we had reality TV. We had, you know, trials that turned into media circuses. We had 24-hour cable talking heads talking about it. When, you know, there were very few stories before this which really had this national impact and really turned into a national phenomenon. It wasn't a, you know, war that we were covering, that we were seeing the, you know, death counts and the casualties every night. It was the blow-by-blow of what they said in court. What was the crazy thing that happened today? What is the current theory about what happened? Is OJ going to, you know, take the stand? The glove incident. You know, it really just turned into a made for television experience. And part of the reason is that the cameras were there and it was on 24 hours a day. So the people involved played to the cameras.
And finally, Ben, I guess, though, the good part of not just the OJ trial that we saw three decades ago, but these other trials, at least if Americans want to, if people, just normal Joes and Marys, Joe and Mary six-pack want to, they can attend these trials. I mean, in a sense, they can sit there and always learn something about the legal profession that is kind of nebulous to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, it did make courts and trials a lot more accessible to people. And I think that was the whole idea behind Court TV, which started before the OJ trial and really exploded after that, is the idea that people never got to see inside the courtroom. They may see a story in printed paper back then about it, but to actually see how the judges rule and how the attorneys question people on the stand. I think, you know, if there is a good thing that comes out of this, it really demystified the court system and made it a lot more accessible to people.
Great stuff as usual, Ben. Thank you. Professor Ben Bogardus, he is currently the Interim Associate Dean at the School of Communications at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Ben, good to chat with you, and we will chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Hey, you're welcome.
Appreciate it. Every Thursday at this time, all things Bridgeport, the website only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi is the executive editor. He's the publisher. He's the ombudsman. He's the assignment editor. He is the reporter. He's the chief photographer. And he is the maitre d' as well at Only in Bridgeport. How are you?
Also, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, how about now, Lenny, I said earlier, and not to be weird with this, but I said there are people who remember where they were when Pearl Harbor came about. That's our parents and our grandparents' generation. People talk about that with the Kennedy assassination. People talk about that with 9/11. And people mention that, at least I remember it vividly, where I was when the OJ verdict came down. Do you?
Yeah. I was managing Joe Ganim's reelection campaign in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
I was at campaign headquarters. We had televisions back then. Yeah, we did. And yeah, that's what I remember it. But I think for me, my memory is that line. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, for me, that whole case was about the prosecution not getting that right.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, just resonated with the jury. You know, you're bringing that glove on And OJ's putting that glove on, and it doesn't fit, right? And so I think they're resonating with the jury.
Yeah.
And a lot of people.
Yeah, and I'm listening to experts that right after that, Letty screaming, well, number one, why are they letting him do it with a surgical glove on, if I remember that? And number two, they were like, yeah, he kind of wasn't pushing too hard here. And number three, well, they're saying, well, if it doesn't fit, you know, if it was wet, what happens to leather when it gets wet and you don't dry it right away? It shrinks. But listen.
Yeah, you're right. It's a great point. Yeah, and Johnny Cochran, he framed that in a way that people could understand it. But, yeah, you make some great points, too. You know, that thing could have gone a bunch of different ways. But for me, that was the flashpoint of that whole case.
Speaking of going a bunch of different ways, that's a segue. That's pretty slick, wasn't it? Generation Now Votes, the year of change, you say, and only in Bridgeport.com flops. What do they end up getting for $100,000?
Nothing. They lost. Heavily. Yeah. So you have this Bridgeport Generation Now Votes, which is an anti-GANM community group. And the treasurer of the organization, Niels Hyman, God bless him. He's made a lot of money investing. And he's the treasurer of this organization that's led by Callie Hellman and Jameen Davis. Mm-hmm. And they spent about $100,000 of, I call him Big Daddy, because he ponies up the money of Niels Hyman's money, who invested into this organization, mm-hmm. to go against Joe GANM. And the whole intriguing thing about these kind of independent expenditure groups, you know, the more they weighed in on this kind in this race against Joe GANM, the better the mayor performed. So, yeah, they spent $100,000 to try to take the mayor out. So his chief opponent, John Gomes, ran out of money, right? Because you had not one, not two, not three, but four elections.
Yeah.
And so this organization is no different than anybody else, spending money for the power and glory to control City Hall. Spent a whole bunch of money, but they spent it in ways which didn't resonate with voters. They were really focused on Joe GANM's past. And the people who are, you know, who know about GANM's past, they're already fixed, right? And they're not moving anywhere. But the people who see progress in the community, they want to know, okay, so you're making this argument against GANM's past. What are you going to do about the city's future? And you know, and GANM got his stuff together.
Yeah.
And in the you know the special election February 28th, and he beat John Gomes by 20 points. And Gomes had run out of money because there was four elections because of what happened with the ballot snafu in September.
Sure.
So over the course of 5 months, it took, you know, how much money do you need to win four elections in 5 months? For the mayor, Joe GANM, was about $850,000.
Yeah, ton of money.
But Gomes was flat broke. So he relied on the independent expenditure from Bridgeport Generation Now Votes. I spent, you know, $100,000 towards the end, and a whole bunch of things that just didn't resonate with voters.
And
waste of money.
Yeah, and Lenny, I mean, obviously you've seen this too, and I was taught early in my career covering politics and now talking to politicians for 30 years doing stuff like this. The worst thing, Lenny, you can be in politics is tone deaf. And is that their problem? You said, you know, it's GANM's past. But, you know, take the blinders off, right? Read the room. If you got $100,000 and you can spend it, you can't spend it on stuff that's not going to get your votes. I was taught that a long time ago.
Yeah. So most electors, most voters, they vote on the future. They don't vote on the past.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you know, GANM made a comeback in 2015 after his issues. You know, over 20 years ago,
yeah.
He made a comeback, and he was reelected. They brought him back in 2015 after he had to leave office in 2003 on corruption charges. He makes a comeback. They bring him back again in 2019. So voters are like, they're not focused. Most of them are not focused on what happened 20-plus years ago. They're focused on, what are you going to do to improve my life?
They want the potholes filled now. They don't care about 8 years ago. Yeah.
Right, and you know, and GANM, whether you love him or loathe him, he doesn't raise taxes.
Yeah.
You know, he since 2015 comeback, the tax rate is the same. okay? And so that's the problem with people who, like, what political consultants who just focus on the past, where most voters are focused on the future. And the same thing with the presidential cycle that's coming up. Most of them are going to be focused on the future. How are they going to make my life better? And voters ultimately just decide, all right, I'd rather stick with Gannon.
Yeah, before we get to your old boss, one more thing here. City council stipends, 15 grand. Now, explain the stipend system in Bridgeport and the proposed raise here. And listen, I, Lenny, I bristle at people that call me up and respond to me on Facebook. Well, you know, they should do it because they love the job or they don't deserve raises. No, no, no. This is 2024. People, even if it's not much in the big picture, they want to get paid.
So Bridgeport City Council members technically are volunteers, and they have access to what are called stipends, basically reimbursement of expenses, or they have a lot of latitude, right, to access the $11,000. And that could be travel expenses, gas mileage, a laptop, a phone to communicate with your constituents. And so in the budget that the mayor has proposed, it's going to increase the stipends from $11,000 per year per council member, there's 20 of them, to $15,000. And so Ivy Nieves makes an interesting point where maybe it's time we have a conversation about giving council members salaries.
Yeah.
These stipends are technically are not salaries. They're like expenses for the course of your position. So I think down the road that may be something that might be debated. I think it's going to have to be a charter change where voters will have to make this decision. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what will happen. But, yeah, it raises a question where a lot of council members say, listen, it is 2024. Our constituents have many more needs. They reach out to us a lot more. There's also the argument if you start paying council members, maybe bring a better candidate. You're paying them. That's part of the equation.
Well, I that's what I believed when the General Assembly finally, you know, got into the present century. And now what, a state house or a house member, a rep or a senator, it's 40 grand or something like that, plus expenses. I mean, Lenny, when it was 20 something grand, all you got up there are people who were either retired or didn't need the money, or people, no offense, real estate people, lawyers, people like that, who could arrange their schedules and say, hey, I'm not going to be in the office till 6 tonight or 5 tonight, because the low pay, and I try to explain this to people, locks out people who might be good at the job.
Right, and especially in a budget in Bridgeport, Connecticut's most populous city, the budget is $650 million. So it's a fraction. So to pay council members this kind of a stipend, it's just, it's minuscule in the larger picture of the city budget.
All right. Finally, as we end every segment with you, what's Lenny's old boss thinking? What is Mr. Trump, to the best of your ability to prognosticate on this, what is he thinking as the Stormy Daniels trial gets closer?
Oh, my God, this is really happening.
You can't wait for this, can you?
Right, but I think that in his head, because I think for a long time he was figuring he would not get here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my former boss is prone to odd hallucinations, and he's probably wondering, how can I really make a mess of this thing that's going to start Monday? Think about it. I think it's going to be like a zoo to choose a jury.
No.
So
God.
Monday is going to be jury selection. It could go into Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. I think what they're doing is there's going to be court Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday off, and Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
But to choose a jury in this process, think about the number of challenges that are going to take. The questions that are going to be asked about, you know, people, can you really be, you know, open-minded about this process? So there's going to be a lot of challenges by lawyers on both sides.
Yeah.
There's certain things they can ask, certain things they cannot, like how did you vote it? You know, who did you vote for? But, it's just to pick a jury. And then you're going to get into this icky process of a lot of salacious stuff.
Yeah.
With Stormy Daniels, the person that, you know, was obviously given a fee to not, you know, make her story public.
Yeah, and you know what, Lenny? But seriously, you know this, probably about half of the country is going to hear the salacious details that she was paid off. And about half of the country, Lenny, give or take a percent or two, are going to go, whatever. Big deal.
I agree. I agree with you. I think part of the country is going to go, all right, he's running for president. He paid her off.
Yeah.
So, keep her, hush money, right? Hush money trial because I had an affair with you know, Stormy Daniels. I think it's going to be part of that. But I'm thinking for your listeners who remember the O.J. trial, how crazy that was.
Oh, God.
I think you're going to have some of the same kind of stuff that's going to come out of this thing.
And I'd love to see how many people, Lenny, as we close on this, say, hey, maybe I should research Ms. Daniels' career.
Oh, yeah. Well, that means she's going to take the stand on a cross-examination. That's going to be part of the same thing. Same thing with Michael Cohen, right?
Yeah.
You know? And what Michael Cohen did time over this stuff, but he's going to be one of the government's, you know, chief witnesses. So yeah, there's going to be a lot. It's going to be very zooey and a very icky atmosphere.
Get the thank you, Lenny. Get the pork rinds and the popcorn ready. Lenny Grimaldi.
Rock and roll hoochie coo, baby. Let's go.
Lenny, thanks. Take care.
All right, thank you.
All right.